Get ready for a journey into the heart of Bridgeport politics with In Absentia, a new podcast from Connecticut Public's investigative team, The Accountability Project. Learn about the city's past and present political dysfunction and the systems that enable it. Tune in wherever you get your podcasts.
Funding provided by Joe Zimmel and Valerie Friedman.
This week on The Wheelhouse. Election Edition 3. We're talking to candidates from Waterbury. For Connecticut Public Radio, I'm Frankie Graziano. This is The Wheelhouse, the show that connects politics to the people. We got your weekly dose of politics in Connecticut and beyond, right here. Election day is right around the corner, and we've been on the campaign trail for the past few weeks, and today we're making a stop in the Brass City. Talking about Waterbury, of course, where not two, not three, but four candidates are squaring off for mayor in a few weeks. It's a stacked lineup for an open race. Waterbury has had its fair share of scandals in the 2000s involving politicians like Waterbury's Wonder Boy, former Governor John Rowland, and former Mayor Philip Giordano. Things have been on the up, though, lately under Mayor Neil O'Leary. But he isn't seeking re-election, so the race for mayor is wide open. We got three of the four folks joining us today. Paul Pernarewski, he's going to be in studio with me, the Democratic candidate. And Carrick Jackson and Keisha Gilliams, both petitioning candidates. They're going to be joining us on Zoom. The fourth candidate, Republican Don Majorano, declined our request for an interview. Folks, we wanted to let you know that today you can call in and ask our candidates questions. How about that? You have the opportunity to ask the candidates questions today. 888-720-9677. Call right now with your questions. And I just want to make sure everybody knows that this is a very legit opportunity we have here to hear from the candidates. We draw names out of a hat to make sure that the order's fair here in this open mayoral race. And we got a timer going to make sure candidates get equal time. And we're going to start this one with Karen Jackson, petitioning candidate for mayor. Karen, how are you today?
Greetings. How are you today?
I'm doing well. It's very nice to talk to you. I want to invite folks one more time to give us a call at 888-720-9677. Karen, my first question, and I'm going to start it with a little bit of a preamble. 2 months ago, I asked my good friend, Mark Pasniokas, he comes on the show a lot, he's from the Connecticut Mirror, about the open race for Waterbury. And he told me about the horror that previous mayors, including Philip Giordano, created for Neil O'Leary. And Paz credited O'Leary for stabilizing the city. If you agree with that, why are you the candidate to either continue that or maybe even build on what Neil O'Leary's done since 2011?
I'm building and dismantling at the same time. There are many aspects of Waterbury politics that need to be changed. For example, the library has an endowment that they haven't seen in 20 years. They're still operating with an antiquated system from 1998. So there's a lot of things that are still not being done. That's just two things. But I'm going to build upon what the current mayor has done, following that quote.
So far on the campaign trail in Waterbury, for folks just kind of tuning in and joining us today, candidates have sparred over crime. Last week, the state reported crime statistics from 2022 and said that overall crime actually down from 2021 to 2022, including a 13% drop in violent crime. Hey, I want to ask you, Karen, how would you address crime in the city? And is it as big of a concern as it's being talked about here in the state?
Okay. Crime, when I was at the last debate, the Waterbury Chamber of Commerce, they brought up the same question. But their idea of crime are children, are young people that look like me and my children. So the 18,000 children in Waterbury are being bred basically as criminals, because in the long run, that's how they're seen. But we have to attack the problem from the root level, which is intervening when there's a problem, or putting resources out there so they won't be a problem. One of my implementations that I'm going to do is, if a young person under 16 gets into trouble, first of all, they will not be handcuffed, and two, they will not be given a record. I'll make them clean the streets up, and then at the end of that, when summertime comes, give them a job. We have to progress. We have to go beyond just locking them up and giving them a record so they can go back to prison again or go back on the street, commit another crime without helping them from the beginning. So that's what I feel about the crime in Waterbury, that it's only ridicule to young folks of color, and that's a big problem.
Are you worried about repeat offenders when we talk about that topic? Are you worried about maybe a call for crime and a call for, I would say, the state maybe to get tougher on repeat offenders? Does that worry you?
Well, no. If you put in resources, the repeat offenders, some of them don't have a place to live. Some of them need resources to get a job because they can't get a job when they get out. A lot of them need help with getting pardons. So when we attack the root problem of why they're doing what they're doing out of desperation and pain, not because they're evil people, then the crime rates will drop, period. The car thefts will drop. I went to a Gilded Brand meeting, and the woman there was very angry that her car got stolen, and she had the nerve to go to where her car was, block the people in, and like she's the police herself, and complain that the police didn't show up. My point is that we have to attack the root of the problem before we lock our children up and use them as fodder.
And as I understand it, there's also been some arguments over the school to prison pipeline in Waterbury that I guess has existed and I guess went to a peak in 2021. So what are your thoughts here? How would you manage a relationship between your office, if elected, and the superintendent's office?
Well, the first thing I'll do, I will, as mayor, I will not be on a voting member on the Board of Education. That's out. And the superintendent, my office will work with the current superintendent in putting in resources for those young people. Meaning there are 150 nonprofits in Waterbury. We can utilize those nonprofits to help our children and place them accordingly. Out of 150 nonprofits, it can be done.
Republican American Livvy Stanford, she's going to join us later on today. She told me about teacher shortages in the city and that the district is about 100 teachers shy. Most of the positions they got to fill are in special education. So help me, what do you offer families of children with intellectual and developmental disabilities?
Well, one of the main issues that I see in Waterbury Board of Ed is the parents are not being informed. There's something called the School Governance Council that should have been implemented over 10 years ago. So, and it's a state law. The School Governance Council is a great way of parents who need help with children with special needs. My son, my middle son, Joshua, is autistic on the spectrum. It took me a long time just to get an IEP and get him help. It was 2 years. Now, he graduated high school. He's in college now. But parents need an advocate for them. To help them with the PPTs, to help them with the IEPs. So that's one thing that I'm going to put in is attach the School Governance Council, whoever, and have them help those parents. That's what part of their jobs are. So that's it. To inform parents what their rights are, what resources are out there, engage the nonprofits that can help them, and also engage the School Governance Council with the superintendent's help.
And Karen, something exciting to tell you about here as we branch away from that topic here is if folks wanted to call in at 888-720-9677, they'd have the opportunity to talk to our candidates today, just like Thomas from Waterbury. Thomas, what do you have for Karen Jackson, petitioning candidate for mayor in Waterbury?
Hey, good morning, Karen, and congratulations on, throwing your hat in the ring for this highly prestigious position. The question that I The question that I have is pretty much for all of the candidates, and I wanted to know what are the two most prominent issues in Waterbury that has or has not been attended to in the fashion that you align with under the last administration that you will make the highest priority to address within the first 100 days in office if elected?
Homelessness.
Thomas, great question. Thank you for that. Go ahead, Karen.
Yes, that is a great question, and thank you for that question. Homelessness is one of the main things that I will help eradicate in Waterbury by building transitional tiny villages where people can be there for 2 years and then thereafter build permanent housing. So permanent housing is a great problem here. The Hartford Assembly, I'm not quite sure, not the state assembly, the city itself, passed a law that homeowners, landlords have to adhere to the code, the housing code of Hartford, or they'll get their houses taken away. That's one other thing that I encountered, even personally in Waterbury, are not only absentee landlords who are not taking care of their property and still demanding rent. So those are the main two things that I'm going to tackle is homelessness and permanent housing for the residents of Waterbury. And thank you for the question again.
A tremendous question from Thomas. Hey, I want to just talk to you about what's been happening in the city with turning these brass mills and the old industries around these brownfields that have developed as a result. Let's move on now to economic development. There's maybe a dozen sites in the city that used to be industrial centers, kind of in the process of being turned for redevelopment. State investing a significant amount of money to help Waterbury revitalize and clean up buildings in brownfield designated areas. So what can you do to help get more of these sites turned around?
Well, one of the plans are to remodel these buildings. Hopefully the ground is not toxic, but remodel the buildings to put homeowners in them or people who need permanent housing in them. That's desperately needed here. There's no it's so sad to drive around, walk around and see empty buildings and still see people suffering on the street. It's heartbreaking. So that's the main thing that I'm going to be doing. But also what I realized with the current administration, what they're doing is building a new downtown.
About 30 seconds here, Karen.
They're building a new downtown at Frey Street and negating the rest of the downtown that's there. So I'm going to help change that.
Karen Jackson, petitioning candidate running for mayor in Waterbury. A lot done in that 10 minutes. We have multiple candidates in the race, so we got to move on. And we're going to move on now to a second candidate in the race, Paul Pernarewski, Democratic candidate. Paul, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be here this morning. Thanks for having us.
Folks, we remind you to join the conversation, 888-720-9677. I asked her, the first question I asked Karen was about what my friend Paz had said about Neil O'Leary and kind of stabilizing the city. Do you agree that Neil has done that? And how can you build upon that success? Or how can you not mess it up?
So, yes, I do agree that Neil has done a terrific job in the past 12 years. You know, I've been on the board since 2002. So when I first came on as an alderman, the city was at the bottom. It was bankrupt. The mayor had just gone to prison. The second time we had a mayor in federal prison actually in 10 years here in the city of Waterbury. So I spent 5 years with the oversight board, and we really began to work on a lot of those on a lot of those issues. In 2011, Neil became mayor, followed in. We've worked very closely together, and he has just pushed it to that next level. And, under his tenure, when we – in 2002, we were at junk bond status. In order to pay – make payroll, we had to borrow $100 million. The state had to do it for us to back us up. That's how we got the oversight board. Today, under Neil's leadership, we're at AA minus. We've got one of the highest bond ratings for a city our size in the state of Connecticut. So we have come a long way. A lot of that has been through the work that Neil has done, that we've done working together. So I would be prepared, you know, to continue the work that he's done. I mean, I think it's the key is to continue the fiscal responsibility. The bond houses, when you look at the reports that they issue, when they did the upgrade, they look at the financial circumstance, the management tools that are in place, and all of that, and they have a positive outlook for the city. And we'll continue that because we'll continue the same policies, the same programs, and make that go on and build on it. Because we're at a point now where the city's finally financially stabilized, so we can start focusing on things that we haven't really been able to focus on in the past.
We were lucky enough to get a call from Thomas in Waterbury. Mm-hmm. We're talking about continuing this. He's talking about the first 100 days. So how can you continue or build upon this? Maybe something that you could do in the first 100 days. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we've got a lot of activity going on right now in downtown that we're going to continue to do with it. You know, the brownfields continue. You had asked about that, and we can talk about that a little bit, where we're going with those things and just make sure that we're looking at it. One of the things that I think, you know, that we really do need to focus on that we haven't focused on enough is education. We do a lot of great things in education. We've built brand new schools. We've got some terrific programs out there. We've got a lot of kids who are doing well, advanced placement, going on to Ivy League schools. We have programs to help them through. We now have the Career Academy that we can help students who don't want to go into college necessarily. But we have a lot of students who still aren't making the grade. They're falling through the cracks. They have a lot of issues. I don't think we focused enough on how we can get that improved. And that would be my goal, to really drill down on that. I think it's something different than what the mayor has done. And I think that's going to require much better lines of communication between the mayor's office and the superintendent's office so that we can have those conversations.
Can you work with the superintendent?
Yes, I think you can work with the superintendent but we'll establish it and we'll make sure. I'm hoping to get a liaison in between my office, someone who directly communicates with the superintendent so I can know what's going on over there and they can know what I'm thinking about it, right? So we have those communications and we're not finding things out after the fact or too late to make a change.
So give me – I'm going to give you a minute just for this mm-hmm. part. Help me understand what's happened with kids being arrested in school or – maybe an activity in school or as a result of some kind of report, and then going to prison. I understand that this was a problem that you guys have dealt with in this administration.
Yes. So, you know.
And how can you deal with it?
Yeah. The school-based arrest, Waterbury, was among the highest for school-based arrests in the city. As you know, the Justice Department has come in and they've been doing an investigation on that. And that's one of the communication issues, right? The mayor didn't find out about the fact that that investigation was ongoing until months after it happened. The United States Justice Department is in Waterbury and nobody thought to tell the mayor about it. That's got to stop and you've got to know about those things. But as soon as that became an issue and they looked at it, we've made some changes to the way this works. And I think what you found before was that a lot of times you were finding the police were being used really as a disciplinary tool rather than a criminal tool. And it was the first line of discipline was to call in a police officer when there were issues there. And so now the plan is, if there's bad things happening in school, kids are still going to get arrested. I mean, that doesn't change if there's violence and those things. But a teacher now, you know, we've put in place a lot of de-escalation plans and we've got in some of these schools behavioral technicians who can work with the students. And what we're finding is, we'll have circumstances where kids are in a fight in the morning. And in the past, that might have led to an arrest. Now we've got these technicians working with them. And, you know, just like, listen, I went to school a long time ago. I've been out of school for an awfully long time and the world has changed. But when we were growing up, people had fights. And at the end of the day, you got to be friends again and you worked it out among yourselves. And a lot of that has changed. But these technicians are helping that to happen again, where, you know, we're working together with the students, working out their issues and helping them learn ways to de-escalate it and deal with circumstances where it doesn't necessarily end up in violence. And that's made a huge difference. The numbers of school-based arrests have come down significantly. And at the end of the day, I don't think the schools are significantly unsafer because of that.
All right. So I asked Karen about this. We're talking about children with developmental and with developmental disabilities, right?
Yes.
And intellectual disabilities as well. So I worry about a teacher shortage there when I hear about that. So how can you address that?
Sure. So, you know, a year ago, and teacher shortages, they're a problem in Waterbury, but they're a problem everywhere. It's not unique to a Waterbury circumstance. It's just an issue with teachers, and especially post-COVID, there's been a lot of stress on teachers through that whole process, and it's just there's been a lot of burnout, so we're seeing that issue. But we have gone from last year over 200 teachers down to this year we're only 100 teachers down. That's still too many teachers down, but 100 teachers down. But about 60% of those are special ed, and you know, even prior to all of this, getting special ed teachers was difficult. That's a very specialized area. It takes a very special person to do that as a career, and so it wasn't always easy to get special ed teachers. We're down about 60 of them right now, so we have to work on getting those folks back in. It is very important that we address the needs of all of our students, especially those who have special needs. And I do think sometimes we're not doing enough in that regard. I do think that sometimes students aren't getting all of the services they need. Just recently, a mother reached out to myself and to State Representative Ron Napoli, and we met with her one morning last week. She has two children, a young child who's on the autism spectrum and it far, far along on that, and a daughter who's got some special needs, but not as serious. And she was having some issues getting her son the help that he needed. And we were able to look into it and intervene and have that happen. But that shouldn't be the way it works, right? It shouldn't be that you have to call your alderman or your state rep to make that happen. The resources are there, and we just have to make sure that people can access them. And that's, as I say, part of this communication thing and education that we really have to work on that I want to drill down on.
This is going to be tough, but I'm going to try to do development in 2 minutes somehow, okay? All right, you didn't get it. This is not a phone call. This is from Zach on Instagram, at Zach Bouye. Any plans to redevelop the mall? You got a brass city, you got a brass mill question there.
Yeah, so as you know, malls have, we can talk all day about what the effects that COVID has had on things, and I think it accelerated a lot of trends that were occurring. Malls were struggling to begin with because of all the online ordering. COVID just, you know, put that on the steroids, basically. So the mall has had a problem. The good news is, the mall has been sold to a developer, and the developer, we had anchors on either side, Sears and Macy's, both of which are closed, but the developer was able to sell Macy's off to Ashley Furniture, and they have plans to put a furniture store on the second level in there, and they've got development plans for retail on the first floor and even some retail around the parking lot outside. So that'll drive some of what's happening with the mall that's there. These new owners are in there, and we have to have serious conversations about what that means, because the traditional malls, I think, aren't going to work anymore, but it's a huge facility. It really is just in downtown. Our mall happens to be right part of the downtown area, so we need to drive that, and I think that's something you can look at, potentially mixed-use housing, maybe some mixed-use, maybe some offices and such in there to make that work. But those are serious discussions we need to have with the developer, and we'll stand ready to help them get that done however they think is the best way to do it.
Last 30 seconds or so here. Brownfields, right? Brownfields, so you want to keep turning that around,
sure,
right? And remediating and abating these properties.
Yeah, Waterbury's become a leader in brownfields. I think that's one of the areas, and there's many, but that's one of the areas that Neil has really shined on. We've been able to get grants from the state, the federal government. We've done a number of them. The Waterbury Industrial Commons has been turned over. We've created some parks. We've got two of them that are in the works right now. Freight Street, we're taking the last building down by next summer. That should be ready, 20 acres to go out to bid. Animet in the South End has been out to bid. We had a couple of folks interested. We picked one, negotiated with them. Unfortunately, that didn't work out. Sometimes that happens. We couldn't come to terms. So we're going back out to bid. We know the second bidder was strong bid, is going to come back and bid. We're hoping to get some others in there as well to try to make that work. But there is interest in doing those things, and we're going to continue to clean them up. We just got $2 million. We're taking over a property on the South End, the old Bristol Babcock. And the owner gave it to us, gave us $1 million we can use to start that cleanup. That's been since a fire in 2015 sitting abandoned. And we've just approved this past month. We're coming back Monday to do it. We didn't get to it. A $2 million grant to begin the abatement down there as well. So they're continuing to go on. And I think our track record is one that's going to make it possible to keep that up.
Our time is up, and I feel like we just speed dated for the last 15 minutes or so, Paul. I thought it was tremendous.
Sorry
Thank you so
that,
much for
but
that.
It was great.
And good luck to you guys on that development on Freight Street and Meadow
Thank
Street.
You.
I know a lot of people in Waterbury want to see some development
yeah,
around
that's
the,
a great place to
the
get
train
it going,
station.
So, yep,
Thank you so much. Last but certainly not, that was Paul Pernarewski. He's a Democratic candidate running for mayor in Waterbury. Last but certainly not least, we're joined now by a third candidate for Waterbury mayor, Keisha Gilliams, petitioning candidate for mayor. Keisha, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Can you hear me well?
I can hear you well. Good morning.
Thanks. Good morning. Thank you for having me.
And, you know, I got to ask the other two candidates about this. What do you think about the state of Waterbury? Has Neil O'Leary sort of stabilized the situation there? What are your thoughts, and how can you maybe build upon what's happening at Waterbury?
So every time I hear Paul speak, I just find that he might be a little delusional. Neil O'Leary has done great for brownfields, right? You have to actually define what is a city. Is a city your buildings, or is a city the people, right? So for me, the city is the people of the city of Waterbury. The people has issues. We are the second highest tax town in our whole state. We are the second poorest residents in the whole state as well, right? So when I hear people speak highly and say they want to hold on to what Neil O'Leary has done, I have a problem with that. Because to me, Neil O'Leary has taken out so many bonds, the residents of the city of Waterbury got to pay those back. We don't get to choose. We don't get to have a meeting. We don't get to vote, right? We have people in place that have taken our money, don't give the residents jobs, don't give the residents a street paved, right? So I don't see it as puffy as my Democratic candidate, because I am also a Democrat.
Hey,
Are you there?
Yeah. So far on the campaign trail in Waterbury, you guys have sparred a little bit over crime, as I understand it. We talked about numbers being down overall in the state, despite what some people say about crime. So where are you at on addressing crime? And do you think it's as big of a concern as some people are talking about?
Across the board, crime, no matter what town you live in, should be on everyone's radar, right? But my main concern is going to be the taxes. My main concern will be jobs. When you talk about crime, who's committing the crimes? If you're talking about youth committing crimes, if you're talking about white collar crimes, it really depends on the crime you're referring to. You don't want your youth out there stealing vehicles. You don't want them out there causing havoc, right? So you want to give them opportunities. For me, when it comes to youth, I want to start an initiative, Each One Teach One. I want to mentor our youth in the city of Waterbury. I want to pair them with businesses, business owners, and people who work for a living. I want them to have mentorship, because if they don't, they'll continue on their path of not having nothing to do in the city other than going to PAL. So when you look at crime, you have to look at not only who is committing the crime, but why are they committing the crime? And I don't foresee any person coming in and say, oh, well, we're going to reduce our crime numbers, because our crime is just up no matter what across the board. Everything has been up since COVID, right? You have people who are children who are bored. They can't be focused in schools.
They're saying that the crime's gone down at least over 2021 to 2022. So where I'm trying to go with this is you're talking about helping out the youth here. Are you concerned that the youth might be targeted too much by police or what have you because of this this supposed rise in crime that people are talking about?
I don't say they're targeted. I say they are committing crimes, though, right? When they're stealing vehicles and the vehicles in Waterbury. So I say they're not targeted by police. I'm saying they have nothing to do. So that's why I say the mentorship program.
Are you concerned about there being a school-to-prison pipeline in Waterbury? We've talked about it a little bit with the other candidates. Are you worried about kids getting arrested as a result of whatever happens in school?
1,000%, right? You don't want that. You don't want to send youth to prison. You want to give them alternatives. You want to give them actually a hope for their future. So no matter if you are arresting them and then turning them over back to their same situation, you're not trying to change their situation, then you will continue to have the same problems over and over again. You do not want to send youth to prison. You don't want to do that, because eventually they have to come out of jail, right? And what are they learning in prison? So you want to have mentors. You want to have them be able to understand there's a whole life outside of their norm. And I don't think the police, our police anyway, are targeting them. They're not like, oh, we're going to target them. No, when they commit a crime, the police are going to take notice of that. That is their job, right? No matter who's committing the crime.
Teacher shortages in the city. Any plans to address that? We're talking about potentially an impact of about 60 teachers short, something like that, to help families with children with developmental and intellectual disabilities?
Yeah, strangely enough, yesterday I had a I took an Uber, and the Uber driver was telling me how his son is autistic, and in the city of Waterbury, he couldn't receive any help at all. So he had to move his son to Naugatuck to go to school because he was being bullied in the city of Waterbury. So you always have shortage of teachers, but one, you have to learn to pay them well. You got to learn to respect them as well too. Pay your teachers well and respect them, all in the same boat. I believe that Superintendent Ruffin, I believe she's actually one of the best superintendents we ever had in the city of Waterbury. She's implemented so many different programs for our youth, right? But there's still a shortage. And why is there a shortage? Why would someone be interested in coming to a school system where, one, they're not paid well, two, they're not respected, three, even teachers are bullied, right? So that's what I get from people who talk to me. They're being bullied by our administrators. We're very heavy top. We're heavy. We have a lot of administrators in place. They receive great salaries. But yet when it trickles down, our teachers aren't paid well. They're not.
We had a Waterbury voter and caller called Thomas call us earlier. Thomas, yes. And he wanted to know about a couple of prominent issues that maybe haven't been addressed or attended to in the last administration that you can address in your first 100 days if you're elected. What do you think about that, Keisha?
So just so you know, my top two issues, the very first issue is taxes, because, again, we pay the second highest tax in the state of Connecticut. That's under O'Leary. Right. So, yes, we've had mayors that went to prison. Yes, they mismanaged funds. But our administration, we mismanaged funds. They mismanaged funds all the time. So my biggest thing is taxes. We got to lower our taxes for our residents that live in the city. When you have to do an assessment, a reassessment of your property, and now your assessment is higher because of lack of inventory, now you have to pay a higher tax, right? A higher tax for your property. So not only are we paying $5,000, $6,000, $7,000 a year for homes, even our car taxes. There's been a time under O'Leary that we have paid double in our mill rate for our car taxes under O'Leary, right? So the state had to step in twice to lower our taxes for our vehicles. The state of Connecticut, not Neil O'Leary. And damn sure not Paul. Sorry for swearing. But definitely not Paul, who sat on a board of aldermen for 20 years.
I got you. Let's go on to economic development here. And we talked a lot about remediating brownfields and the mayor getting some credit for getting some significant investments from the state. What do you think about these projects? What else can you offer here in trying to get some economic development from the old brass mill industry?
Yes. So brownfields, we're going to give Mayor O'Leary, we give him a B minus for that, right? Because you need money in order to do our brownfields. You need a lot of money to knock these buildings down, clean the area up. You need a lot of money to change things. So we did a great job in the South End, right? We have a baseball field. We have walking, you know, you can walk now on some of the sections of the South End. That's great. But is it helping the residents that live there? And that's the question. Who is it for? Is it for the residents, or is it for people to come out of town and utilize the area? I'm talking about only the residents that live there. I'm not talking about people who live in Middlebury, Woolkit, Cheshire. I'm talking about the residents of the city of Waterbury. Are they going to utilize these parks? Do they need housing before they need parks? Do they need money in their pocket before they need parks? You understand? I believe that he's done a great job with knocking some of these buildings down, because he's probably the only mayor that's tackled that. However, who is it benefiting? And that's the question.
We have a nice little question that we got from Instagram. It comes from James Crocker. Are you thinking about youth getting into politics? You talked about maybe keeping youth away from the prison system. What about politics? You have any interest in trying to get kids involved if you become the mayor?
I want the kids of the city of Waterbury to be involved in anything they want to be involved in. If that's politics, that's so be it. Like I said, I'm doing a mentorship program. I will even mentor kids, right? I want people to understand that we all need chances. Everyone in the city, we need the chance now. We have to make sure that our children are not doing a disservice to ourselves. Parents are stressed. Teachers are stressed. I want the children of City of Water, they want to be cops, they want to go into armed forces, they want to be politicians. Anything they want to do, we need to be the ones to give them that. That's how I feel about the children of the City of Waterbury.
I'm going to ask you this question. I got a minute left, so I hope you can answer it quick. Latine population in Waterbury, about 115,000 or so people in there. A lot of people of color in the City of Waterbury. How are you going to address issues that they may have?
Did you just say just Latino? Say that one more time. Sorry.
I brought up the Latina community as an example, but what about helping out people of color in the city?
Well, I'm a person of color, right?
Yeah, so there you go, Keisha.
I'm a person of color. So it's not about people of color, because all of us is going to be helped, right? When I, as mayor, because when I tell you about taxes, that affects everyone. When your taxes are up, you got to pay more in rent. We have a serious problem with homelessness. We have a serious problem with evictions.
About 30 seconds left.
Okay, so across the board, the goal is to make sure that the residents of the city of Waterbury, no matter their race, no matter their religion, we're all going to be helped, no matter who they are, as long as they live in the city. I am only for the city residents, no one else. No one getting jobs, you know what I'm saying? I am more only for them. You will never hear me talk about people from other towns.
Keisha, thank you so much for answering our questions today. It was so good to have you on, Keisha. Keisha Gilliams, running for mayor in Waterbury. We had three out of the four candidates running for mayor in Waterbury on in that segment. And we appreciate you all calling us and asking us questions, sending us questions on Instagram. It was tremendous. 888-720-9677. If you have any questions for our next guest, Livvy Stanford, she's a reporter for the Republican American. That comes after this break. You're listening to The Wheelhouse on Connecticut Public.
Support for this podcast comes from Hartford Healthcare.
Elevating Health is funded by Hartford Healthcare. ECMO is a leading-edge, life-saving treatment for patients with cardiac or respiratory failure. Dr. Jason Gluck, director of the Mechanical Circulatory Support Program and Emergency Cardiac Care at Hartford Hospital, explains what it is.
So ECMO stands for extracorporeal membrane oxygenation, outside the body oxygenation of blood. It's a life support technique that's used by highly sophisticated medical systems for patients with severe heart or lung failure. The technique involves removing blood from the body, oxygening it, and then returning it back.
ECMO procedures happen in the ICU, but not all hospitals are equipped with the necessary technology and staff. Dr. Gluck describes Hartford Hospital's ECMO Go team.
So ECMO is considered when treatments have failed, and in our center, with a special ECMO on the Go team, we'll actually take that technology to their hospital and help them out there if they need to stabilize the patient and then bring them back to Hartford for recovery.
For more information, go to ctpublic.org/elevatinghealth.
This is The Wheelhouse from Connecticut Public Radio. I'm Frankie Graziano. We just heard from three of the candidates in the Waterbury mayoral race. Now we're going to bring on somebody who can help us unpack what we just heard. Here with us is, in studio, to my left, Livvy Stanford, Waterbury Republican American. So happy to have you on today.
Nice to be here. Thank you very much for having me. Appreciate
All right. It. I'm giving you the ultimate task here. We just had three candidates on in Waterbury, right? So you got to hear what they had to say. What were your initial reactions from hearing from Keisha, Paul, and of course, Karen?
Well, certainly they had a lot of different viewpoints on issues. Some, Keisha and Karen, of course, are asking for more change on the issues going on in Waterbury. Paul, of course, has talked about continuing the work of Mayor Neil O'Leary while differentiating on the issue of education. I think in speaking what Keisha Gillams talks about, the tax rate being the second highest tax rate in the state. And this is something that I have, written a lot about when it comes to the tax rate. And part of that is due to the mismanagement of past administrations in terms of the taking from the pension fund. And now the city is kind of tasked with a pension obligation fund of $192 million that they have to pay off over many years. And that amounts to about 19 mills in total from the mill rate. And so that's part of the thing that they cannot go against they can't not pay it. They have to do this until about 2037. So it's a bond that
Sounds like you have some bad news there for Waterbury residents, that you're still going to have some some high taxes for a little while. So you have to deal with the high bill
rate. That's one part of it. The other part of it is that you had the reevaluation of properties due to New Yorkers moving in into the city. And so that resulted in reevaluation. And that's also resulted into, you know, more of a higher tax rate because of the rise in home prices as well.
I know this is hard for some listeners to understand because they may be seeing things online. They may be hearing things from politicians. So if they see a crime happen in the neighborhood, it could be the end of the world for them because this is something that is happening in their sphere. But we look at crime numbers to try to help us understand what's really happening because there can be a lot of noise. That's what we do on the Wheelhouse, right? Heavy on the facts, light on the noise. So help us out here. Is there a crime problem in Waterbury? What do you think?
Well, it there has been crime. It has been. It depends on how you look at the statistics. There's a lot going on. I know that violent crime is down 2% in Waterbury. The number of murders this time of year have gone up a bit. Rapes have gone up about 6%. Aggravated assaults have gone down substantially. So it kind of is just kind of a mixed bag. But in terms of the number of shots fired that in cities, that's gone down substantially. So, but overall, violent crime has gone down 2% in the last year.
You covered education. You talked about here in the beginning the bit of a difference that these guys are having on this. You also heard Paul Pernarewski maybe saying that this was his friend Neil O'Leary's maybe a little bit of a weakness maybe here in addressing education. I don't know. Help us sort through where the candidates are in education.
Well, Paul's talked about, and he mentioned this into the last debate about differentiating himself and wanting to have a liaison between the between the superintendent's office and the mayor's office, and that comes down to, I think, there was a trust issue between Mayor O'Leary and the superintendent, as he did not know for nearly 9 months about the Department of Justice investigating the superintendent concerning school-based arrest. So that's one area that he's differentiating and wanting to have more of a liaison between them. I know that Ms. Morano, I know, who was on the show today, but she's talked about...
Yeah, she declined.
She's talked about wanting to start with all new leadership. You know, from the top down, she's wanting to look at that. She's wanting, you know, having new leadership, looking at salaries of school administration, of cabinet, and you know, one. She says going back to basics is what she would like to do. So that's one thing that she kind of differentiates there in terms of that she just wants to really start anew. You know, back to the basics in terms of how she differentiates a little bit there.
I skipped this, and I wish we got to it. So this is very important. They didn't get to address this really, but there's the teacher shortage, but then there's also school readiness issues in Waterbury. Tell us about issues that kids are having, maybe falling short of national targets.
Well, I know that in school readiness, they're at 19%, and 42% is in Connecticut, and 75% is the target. So they definitely...
Target is 45% in Connecticut, and then
45% in the state, about that, and then it's 19% for Waterbury, and it's 75% is the target range, what the hope is to be reached.
Sure.
So that's definitely a concern in terms of readiness for students, and that has been a concern that has been brought up a lot with the candidates on the issue.
So is there anything these candidates are offering that sounds like it could be tangible or anything like that to address the issue?
Well, with the issue of school readiness, I know that I'm not sure on that one. I know they haven't really delved into.
Well, hopefully that'll be something to watch as we're looking at your stories here. You've done a tremendous job covering the race and things happening in Waterbury. And you can see that at rep-am.com. Is it a hyphen dash? How do I say that?
Is it rep-am.com?
Yeah, rep-am.com.
Correct.
And if you got any story tips, you can email them to Livvy, too. I'm sure she would appreciate that. Hey, we didn't get into this with the candidates as well, but Waterbury Hospital. I know people that work at Waterbury Hospital and have heard from them in recent years about not being able to take vacation during the pandemic, being short-staffed, things like that. So what do you say, what do you hear in there? And even maybe talk of, from one of the candidates, maybe even trying to close one of the hospitals in the city?
Okay, yeah, that's certainly a big issue. Waterbury Hospital has been, you know, a lot going on with the hospital. Decline. There's been a lot of issues in terms of Prospect Medical, in terms of they've also had a cyber attack.
Prospect Medical is the group that runs.
They own Waterbury Hospital. And so there was a cyber attack, as well as there's been issues with them being able to pay their vendors. And this all comes back to the issues that Prospect Medical and many of their hospitals have faced in terms of not being able. There's been some issues raised about mismanagement within Prospect and the way that funds have been distributed in the hospitals, and that's been a concern. Right now is the question about whether Yale will the certificate of need, which will be decided about whether Yale will be able to buy Waterbury Hospital. And that's just basically what is, you know, on the question right now.
So that could be potentially hope for people that work at Waterbury Hospital. But one of the candidates, I think it was Dawn Majorano, did she talk about closing Waterbury Hospital, or was there a mix-up there?
I know that she, that's something that I still,
something that is still, still to understand in the hopper. Okay. I appreciate that. Love honesty here on the Wheelhouse. 888-720-9677. If you have any questions for us, hey, some of the land targeted for economic development in the cities right next to your office, in Waterbury, actually was there yesterday. Freight Street, right? Right at the train station. Can the candidates do anything to spur economic development, maybe even attract workers that train it down to Bridgeport or even New York City?
Well, brownfield remediation, that was one of the things I wanted to mention also. It takes time. It takes a lot of time to remediate brownfields. It's a real process. It doesn't happen overnight. You can't just build right away on these brownfields. But Freight Street is one of those main, it was a big monumental press conference last week because they were finally going to tear down the final building there at Freight Street. And that's going to be a major area that they're really hoping to redevelop, and they can redevelop that into retail, mixed, trans-oriented development, all kinds of development in that area. So the hope is, they're hoping to really make that an area that improves the quality of life in Waterbury.
It takes a lot of time to remediate these situations. But is it I'm thinking about this for, it was like a $4 million investment that they got from the state, right? That was kind of historic?
For
brownfields?
They've got a lot more than that. They've got a lot of
some federal dollars too?
They've got millions of dollars for brownfield remediation over the years, and that money has been, they've been seen as the national leader on brownfields, and particularly in the state, for their work in brownfield remediation.
So is this one of an issue that it's kind of like you don't want to mess up what the previous administration has already built? Is this something that they could even build upon? What do you think?
I think it's something they can build upon, but I know it also has to do with relationships, and I know that Mayor Neil O'Leary has had a lot of relationships with officials in the state and being able to build that trust that they can be trusted for these grants and the remediation work that has been done within the state.
You're almost off the hot seat here. You've done a tremendous job so far. Here's the last question, okay? We're thinking about November. Any idea how things might shake out in Waterbury? I'm not necessarily asking you to make a prediction, but can you help us kind of handicap the field? Because there are four candidates. Help us understand who's who and where somebody might be if we were looking at this in a horse racy type of way.
So you're asking about each candidate's position, or are you asking?
Is there a favorite? Who are the endorsed candidates out of the two? What should we be looking at over the next month or so?
Well, Mr. Pinaruski has certainly received a lot of endorsements. Ms. Morano has as well. I think it's, we'll see. It's really a question of, Ms. Morano is presenting herself as a fresh voice in Waterbury, as somebody who is not a politician. She's a businesswoman who wants to come in and make changes in the in Waterbury, and then you have Mr. Pinarewski, who's been in Waterbury for more than 20 years and on the board of aldermen and has been there in the government. And then you have Ms. Gillams, who's ran for mayor previously, also addressing issues, and Ms. Jackson, who is there as well. She is a graduate student and a former councilwoman from Bridgeport who is also asking, for some change when it comes to helping residents with homelessness and the population. And that's been a big fixture of her campaign, as well as Ms. Gillams is also talking about what the residents, she's fixating towards specifically city.
Thank you for bringing it all together there. There's so much happening in Waterbury, four candidates in the race. Excited to hear from three of them today and excited to talk to Livvy Stanford today from the Republican American. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Livvy.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
And thank you so much for having your great coverage in Waterbury. Hey, we're not done with election season yet. We got a couple more shows left, including we're going to tackle Bridgeport next week. So email us. Wheelhouse@ctpublic.org if you have any questions. We'll also have an Election Day recap on the day after Election Day. Today's show produced by Meg Dalton, technical producer Kat Pastor. Thank you, Tess Terrible, for helping us in studio. Interns are Letitia Peters and Joey Morgan. Special shout out to our social team for helping us with listener questions. Thank you so much, Sabrina Francesca, and the rest of the team there. Download The Wheelhouse anytime on your favorite podcast app. I'm Frankie Graziano. This is The Wheelhouse. Thank you for listening.